All right, this is Jim Fitzgerald, Different Breed Podcast, episode 1.2, I would say. I recorded a podcast last week, my first one, and ran it straight through, unedited, uncut, and, I made a promise to myself that I was going to post that first podcast and kind of leave my comfort zone and make it happen. I'm very shy talking in front of the camera. Not good at speaking by myself, and I knew it was important for me to get that out, and, you know, I got a ton of support in doing this. Unfortunately, I watched it back, and there was just things that I didn't like, and that's really what it comes down to, is it didn't come off the way that I wanted it to come off. So essentially what I'm doing is I'm going to try to give that same rundown in the same order of events and just try to state it a little bit more clear and have it make more sense. So a podcast is something that I've been really enthusiastic about. I've been trying to do this for a long time. It's been a long time coming for sure. And like I said, just having a difficult time speaking in front of a camera by myself, you know, without a partner. A partner was something I was really looking for, a co-host. And just for whatever reason, haven't been able to make it work out with anyone. Whether it's their schedule or me not wanting to work with the person. Whatever it may be, I haven't been able to find a right fit. So until I can do that, I am in the market for a co-host. Looking forward to having somebody on with me to do this however many times a week. But until I, you know, find the right guy or girl, this is something that I'll do by myself. And I'm going to keep practicing and trying to keep getting better at it until, you know, we obviously take this space over. We're just going to talk about a couple topics. More of an intro episode. I'm actually going to record another episode after this and try to get two episodes out by tomorrow. And we'll go from there. But for today, you know, I'd really like to just touch on basically how Different Breed started. You know, a little bit of my own background in regards to coaching, college ball, and, my transition into coaching from playing, and you know how it wasn't really as smooth of a transition as I would have hoped, and it's something that I'm working on more and more every day and really trying to get better at. So with that being said, you know, we'll get started and just basically dive into a little bit about myself. I'm currently the hitting coach under Coach Watson at Bloomfield College. He offered me the hitting coach position a couple months ago. I'm very, very excited, very happy to be a part of the team. I've been working with the guys, and the guys have really taken me in. You know, they're very open to the things that I have to say and extremely coachable, and they're just great dudes, honestly. And the rest of the coaching staff has been nothing but great. I talk to Coach Watson all the time and always bouncing ideas off of each other. He's given me a lot of opportunities with showcases and, you know, just getting me out there and getting Different Breed out there. And that was an awesome selling point, and it's really been a great start so far. So I'm really looking forward to getting going with that. But before, you know, I accepted this job at Bloomfield, right out of college, I had, very, very thankful and grateful to have been offered a position, an assistant coach position at Burton Community College, which is a school that, you know, is very near and dear to my heart. I played there for 2 years, had two pretty successful seasons. I was a first team all region outfielder my freshman year, hit over 400. My sophomore year, I was a all region honorable mention. Got a Division I scholarship to go play baseball at the University of Arkansas Pine Bluff. And unfortunately, it didn't work out, for you guys looking to go play at the next level, and guys that are there now, they know how difficult it is to meet these requirements of a Division I program. Unfortunately, I didn't find out until I got down there. But, you know, everything happens for a reason, and it all worked out for the best for, you know, whatever that may be. It all worked out for me. So I came back home. I transferred to Kane University, finished out my college career. And, you know, it was good to be home. I love it around here, and would have loved to go play Division I ball down south. And, you know, those guys, they play Alabama, TCU, so it would have been, you know, pretty cool to play on TV. But, like I said, everything happens for a reason. And who knows what would have happened had I stayed down there. Different breed may have never been, you know, a thought. So I'm very grateful for every step along the way up until this point. You know, it's... I love this game, man. I just love this game. And it really comes down to, I just want to be around it as much as I possibly can. And whether that was, you know, playing or whether it's coaching, you know, this is a game that has consumed my life. You know, it has taken over my entire life from the moment I picked up the ball. And I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon, really. You know, it's I love this. I'm obsessed with it, and, you know, this is just something that I just genuinely enjoy doing. With that being said, it wasn't always like that. You know, I kind of touched on the topics that we were going to talk about, and really that transition from playing to coaching, it was a difficult time. And, you know, when you go and you invest your entire life into, you know, training every single day for, you know, an entire college career, that's really what it was. It was every single day for hours and hours on end. You know, I had a part-time job when I was in college, but my main focus and my main job was, you know, doing whatever I could to be the best player on the field every single day. Some days I accomplished that and some days I didn't. But transitioning into college coaching, you know, like I said, very lucky. I kind of surpassed the whole high school coaching and jumped right into junior college at a school that I played for. So I was very, very passionate from the beginning because it was a place that I felt like really almost raised me. It was a place where I feel like I grew up, you know, being in a difficult place before getting over to Bergen, you know, it was a place where I kind of started to develop as a human being and develop this work ethic that, you know, was unprecedented to really anything else going on in my life. All I cared about was winning baseball games and contributing in those baseball games. I will be the first one to tell you I wasn't one of those bench guys, unfortunately. You know, I love my team, love the game, but if I wasn't playing, I had a really difficult time. So it was my job to make sure I was always playing because that's when I was at my best, and that's when I feel like the team was at its best. So going into Bergen, you know, you come across all walks of life, really. You know, you come across kids that are just trying to make it. You know, they're just trying to get an education. They're just trying to get through the day. And that was something that I just personally couldn't relate to. This was all I knew. This was all I knew from the beginning. You know, I didn't know how to do anything else, quite frankly. And I knew that if I worked hard, you know, I'd get some opportunities. And I made a promise myself that I would always take advantage of any opportunity that came my way. I went on every visit to schools. I tried to put myself in the best position that I possibly could to have a successful 4 years of college baseball, which was my ultimate goal. My goal was never to play professional baseball. My goal was to, from the very beginning, from day one, have four successful college seasons. I think I accomplished that 3 out of 4 years. You know, junior year, I wasn't very happy with my results, but 3 of the 4 years, I felt as though I accomplished that. And going back to a second ago, that transition of just being around kids that are trying to have fun and trying to, you know, get through the college life and get their degree. Like I said, that was something I couldn't relate to. As to be as uncorny as I possibly can, this game was truly something that I was willing to put everything on the line for. I was willing to do whatever it took to put myself and my team in the best position to win. So anyone not willing to do what I was willing to do, I have a really hard time relating to. And you come across some of these guys, right? You come across a Mikey Casaleggio. You come across a JaVale Barnes. Dogs. Alexia George. Dog. You come across these players that are willing to do just that. They're willing to do whatever it takes to play this game. And that's why I have such a great relationship with, you know, some of these people, because we're kind of on that same, we're on that same frequency of just pure passion and love to go out there and play this game and play it at a high level for as long as we possibly can. So it was something that I had to kind of get used to, that, you know, not everyone's built like a Mikey Cass. Not everyone's built like a JaVale Barnes or a Julius Pryor. Pryor, I don't know how to pronounce his last name still. You know, there's people that just aren't built like that, and that's something that I kind of had to come to grips with. It's still a challenge to this day. You know, I still, you know, do my best day in and day out to try to, you know, bring my A game every single time we have practice, every time we have a hitting session, because, like, you never know what it's going to be that might, you know, flip that switch and put them on that same level. And ultimately, you know, that's all I could ask for is I can't expect anyone to care as much as I care. But if I could get a quarter of that from everybody, you know, my clients, my past teammates, my current players that I'm coaching, you know, I feel like we're in a good spot. And like I said, just really, it's day to day trying to grow and study and just, and, you know, get better at being a better communicator, trying to crack the code of what it's like to be a teenager these days, you know, a teenager, a young adult. How do you impact someone's life? You know, how do you impact someone's life, and how do you put them in the best position to succeed? And that's stuff that I lose sleep over every day, you know, every night. I always say that there's, you know, a handful of things that I truly lose sleep over. Those things would be constantly wondering whether or not I'm doing enough. I put in the hours, 16, 18 hours every single day. This is all I do. I study, I watch film, I work with my guys. My guys know that I'm available 24/7 for whatever they may need. So really, am I doing enough? Am I doing enough to put them in the best position to succeed? Am I doing enough to help my business grow? Am I doing enough? Am I being a good brother? Am I being a good son? Am I fulfilling, you know, the views that, you know, my family has of me, that my, you know, my significant other Cassandra has of me? How could I be better? Am I doing enough? That would be one. Two is I constantly lose sleep over innovation and how I can leave this game better than the way I found it. And that's not an easy task. It's extremely difficult. It's an extremely difficult thing to, you know, when the brain doesn't stop, it's a tough thing to cope with, you know, and it's all this makes up for 90% of my, you know, thinking. It's all I think about, you know, outside of my regular 7 to 3, 8 hour job, you know. You know, a lot of people, I come off as a hitting coach, and I'm a hitting coach at heart, and it's what I love, and I'm fascinated with the art of swinging the bat and human movement. Being a hitting coach it probably makes up for maybe about 30% of my time. You know, the other 70% is really truly dedicated to studying and innovating, inventing things, and just trying to draw things out of my brain that can just possibly help progress the game and make the game better and make the swing better, and that's really what it comes down to. The third thing, and it's probably outside of, you know, my thought process to the game and the swing and personal development, I have a really tough time coping with my guys that, you know, they'll have a bad game. And that's I was talking to a friend of mine, Coach Bernie, and I remember telling him this exact thing of, you know, what keeps me up at night, and man, do I lose sleep when some of my guys don't play well. It drives me crazy, and in a game of failure, that's such a tough burden to put on yourself. And you know, I just truly think that that's what kind of motivates me and makes me a better coach. Constantly driven I want my guys to be as perfect as I can. I want to be perfect. And when they don't succeed, or they have a bad game, or they strike out, or, you know, they only get one hit, like, I take that super personal. And it's a really tough thing for me to deal with. But like I said, you know, it comes with the territory, and it's just an obsessed mind. And that's kind of how it goes. And all I could do is my best. And like I said, it motivates me to be as good as I possibly can day in and day out. Because when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, right, this is all some of these kids have. You know, you like I said, you get those groups of kids that you get that handful that are just different. They're just, they breed this, you know, and then you get the kids that want to play well, and this is all they may have. You know, there's for most of these kids, there's no professional baseball after this. There's no college baseball after this. So that means something. You're dealing with a career, you know, to whatever level it may be. You're dealing with, you know, the livelihood of someone's career, someone's baseball career. And that's something that needs to be taken seriously. My mentor, John Peabody, hitting coach, best hitting coach in the world, out in California, he did a YouTube video, and he was interviewed by somebody, and, you know, he says he's the hitting coach for the number one draft pick. I forgot what year it was, but Mickey Moniak just got called up this year, got his first MLB hit. And you know, he's like, you don't know who it is that you're dealing with. You don't know who it is that you're coaching. You know, they may be the next number one overall draft pick. They may not be, but they might. And that's something to take serious. And, you know, that's something that I always think about day in and day out. Always take that in consideration, that you never know when that player's day is going to come. You know, you never know when that's their last day is, and anything you could do to make that an enjoyable experience for them for as long as you possibly can is very important and something that needs to be taken seriously. Going off that, I'm going a little bit off topic, and I'm kind of straying away from my thing, but I'm actually happy about it, because it's leading to train of thought that I didn't think it was going to go to, and it's just going to provide for more content, and I'm really happy about that, considering I'm fairly new to this. That's really the foundation of what Different Breed is. You know, I didn't get in this for the money. if the money comes, I won't be opposed to it. I'm telling you that. But like I said, there comes a point where people ask me all the time, why don't you open up a facility? Why don't you go rent the place out? Why don't you go do this? When are you going to open up the different breed training facility? The thing is that the problem with a facility is the day you open that facility, you're turning into a business, and different breed is a brand. You know, it's a lifestyle, it's a mentality, it's an ego. It's not a business. It's not. This isn't a money grab. This is a concentrated study of work, you know? And the moment you turn it into a business, the moment you worry about whether or not you're going to keep the lights on, the moment you worry about whether or not, you know, you're going to have rent to, you know, the money for the rent, the brand takes a backseat to the money. And that's something that I vowed I would never do. And that's really what it comes down to. This will never be money over brand, business over brand. It'll never happen. I love all my guys. I've given out more free work than anybody in the world. I'll tell you that. I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to help people. I love helping people. And if I have the ability to say something or, you know, like I said, impact an individual in any way, shape, or form, then that's something that I take very seriously. So it'll always be brand over business. You know, we segued a lot around in this, and I'm not even going to watch this back. I'm not even going to edit it. I'm going to run it straight through and hop into the next episode. I think this was a pretty good intro to what it is that I'm trying to do here and what it is that I'm trying to provide. And yeah. Let's take over the podcast space.